Aerial wolf control in Alaska has ardent supporters and vehemently opposed detractors. Good morning, I'm Lori Townsend. Advocates say hunting wolves from planes and helicopters is the effective way to bring down the number of predators to increase moose population for hunters. But those who are opposed say there's not enough science on whether killing predators to manage for abundance is the right approach. How should Alaska manage predators, their prey, and hunting opportunities for Alaskans? Predator control in the Kenai is today's discussion on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
You can find APRN headlines from around the state online at alaskapublic.org. There you'll discover local and worldwide news, upcoming events, and statewide community conversation. alaskapublic.org, connecting you to Alaska one story at a time.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend, and today we're talking about predator control on the Kenai Peninsula. Joining me in the studio are Jeff Selinger. He is the area wildlife biologist for Fish and Game and lives in Soldotna. Is that right?
Yes.
Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Lori.
And also Teresa Fiorino, who is with Defenders of Wildlife and is, do you live here in Anchorage?
I live in Anchorage, yes.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning, Lori.
So let's start just a little bit with kind of laying out the landscape of what we're talking about. We've got two areas in the Kenai, 15A and 15C. 15A is the northern area, mostly federal land, and apparently the concern is that there's not good habitat for moose. And what can you tell us about that area and the situation with the moose habitat there, Jeff? It's my understanding there's not a lot of state land in that area.
That's correct. 15A is essentially in the northwestern portion of the Kenai, roughly from the mountains and then north of the Kenai River. In 1947 and in 1969, there was two significant burns that really increased the moose population in that area. We haven't had any significant habitat turnover since that time, and we've seen our moose populations decrease. That's pretty much the story in 15A.
Okay, so what needs to happen there is either, and how has the situation changed since those last burns? I imagine there's more population, and is there quite a bit more risk now if there is a burn in that area?
Yeah, there is. You know, the Kenai Peninsula population, human population, has grown significantly. And, you know, we've seen urban sprawl down there, and that's where we see the habitat disturbances is along the roadways and where people live. Back in, you know, in the further back country, it's mature forest. A lot of it is now, or if not mature, at least out of the reach of moose for productive browse.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-478-8255 is the number to call if you're out of the Anchorage area and you'd like to join our conversation today. 1-800-478-TALK. In the Anchorage area, it's 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. And 15C is the southern area. And it's my understanding that in that area, the concern from the state's perspective is that there's not enough bulls and that hunting has been reduced, is it 80% because of that shortage?
Well, actually, it's probably more. And low bull-cow ratios are a concern in both 15A and 15C. The main difference, and again, 15C is basically south of the Kasiloff River and south of Tustamina Lake. And then the area that we're talking about is all north of Kachemak Bay down by Homer. There we've held our population has been within intensive management objectives. However, our bull-cow ratio was significantly depressed after years of the previous harvest scheme. Mm-hmm. So we took some drastic restrictions this last year. The Board of Game passed a proposal that we could only shoot a bull with 50-inch antler spread or at least four brow tines on one side, which is significantly different from what it was prior to that. And we've seen our overall on the Kenai, we saw our harvest decrease from roughly 400 moose per year down to about 30 this past moose hunting season.
And when you say 400 down to 30, are you talking about the number of bulls or?
Yeah. I mean, there is a small antlerless harvest down in Homer. You know, it's a cow hunt down there where you're allowed a cow that's not accompanied by a calf. And we usually take 20 to 25 animals annually out of that.
And what would you like to see? You said there's about 40 bulls now in C, or is that total?
No, the harvest that we had last year, we had about 30 moose harvested. Other than that permit hunt, the antlerless hunt, we harvested about 30 bulls on the entire Kenai last year.
Okay, I see. Sorry. So what would you like to see for a good number of bulls to cow ratio? What's desirable in that area?
Well, you know, there's debate on that, but generally what we shoot for is about 15 to 20 bulls per 100 cows.
Okay. I don't expect you to give me the whole history, but talk to us a little bit about when Alaska started using aerial control methods for predators.
Well, if you really go back in history, it was allowed by the general public. You did not need permits. And then I can't remember the exact year off the top of my head. But
1971.
Thank you. I knew somebody would have that number off the top of their head. The legislature passed a law that said that was no longer a legal way to go and harvest wolves.
Right. But that was a national law. Correct. That's the aerial. You're talking about the Airborne Hunting Act of 1971 that sort of prohibited shooting from aircraft except for in instances of protecting wildlife. So that was kind of the area that was left open.
Yeah, I think it was later in Alaska, if I'm not mistaken, where the legislature said by our laws that you could not do that.
And so tell us about some areas that you feel like this has worked out well.
Well, I mean, I think the best example, and again, I apologize, I don't have the exact data with me, but in the Southern Alaska Peninsula herd, there was a group of wolves, a specific pack that was targeting the caribou calves. They were down to one or two calves being produced or that would be recruited per year. So it was very, very low recruitment. That population was decreasing significantly. They went in, you know, removed those animals, and they saw significant increases in the Southern Alaska caribou herd calf survival. So animals were again being recruited into that population.
Mm-hmm. When you look at the area 15A where there's not good habitat for moose, how particular are moose about what they eat? What's desirable? What can they survive on? And what's there for them right now?
Well, I mean, there's, you know, various plants, and, you know, they eat plants mainly. Aquatic plants are real important during the summer. They're very digestible, have a lot of nutrients in them. And then, you know, once you get into the winter and you're eating browse, basically the only place they get nutrition when they're browsing in the winter is they eat a twig, and the central portion of the twig is wood, and the outer part is bark. And then there's a little thin layer, it's called cambium. And that's where the moose get their nutrition. So depending on the stem that they're browsing on, you want a skinny stem is much better because you've got a higher ratio of cambium per non-usable parts of the plant. So they're mainly browsers in the winter, and that's where fires that regenerate into hardwoods coming back in, and that's what the moose will focus on, the willows, the aspens, cottonwood, various species that they'll utilize.
Does the state ever undertake, or the Board of Game, do they have other methods such as mechanical clearing, that sort of thing, that they'll undertake at times to try to increase the opportunities for browsing?
Yeah, maybe I'll back up just a tad, if I may. We have two areas of intensive management that are areas that are identified as intensive management, and that's 15A and C, and that's why we're talking about those. You know, by law, the primary benefit of wildlife in those areas is designed for human consumption, for the moose populations in those two areas. So that's why we're talking about those two.
Mm-hmm. Teresa, did you want to jump in here? You've heard Jeff's perspective on what's needed in those two areas. Is there something that you'd like to comment on, or?
I guess, not yet. I mean, Jeff kind of outlined the problems that are occurring there, and I guess in general, that's one of the places where we agree. The habitat obviously is, from our perspective, the primary limiting factor in 15A, and then the overharvest of bulls was a problem in 15C, and ADF&G rightly recognized that was a problem, and they had a proposal to the Board of Game to restrict the antler harvest in that area. And so we're in agreement on that, and I believe so, that wolves are not the primary limiting factor, nor is predation the primary limiting factor in those areas. It's the habitat and the overharvest of bulls that was the cause of the decline. In 15A, certainly the habitat being limited has caused the population of moose to be lower than the Board of Game objectives, and actually the ADF&G had a proposal to lower those objectives in 15A because they recognized that the habitat is not going to be what it was in the past, and due to settlement patterns and the lack of fire and things like that. So as far as I'm concerned, we're in agreement on those issues.
Mm-hmm. And so 15A, where there's not a lot of state land.
Yeah, that's correct.
3% or something is state land?
Yeah, and about 80% is Kenai National Wildlife Refuge lands.
And so what's the agreement between National Wildlife Lands and the state when it comes to these kind of efforts for predator control or clearing? What can be done in those areas?
Sure. I'm just going to want to back up again a little bit. You know, intensive management doesn't just mean predator control. It can be based on habitat manipulations also. And we are working with the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge to try to develop a plan that will allow us to turn the habitat over, set back succession, so we have better browse species for moose in that area.
Okay, so they're on board with the idea that there needs to be better habitat.
Yeah, I mean, generally speaking, they oppose predator control, you know, at this point in time. But as far as habitat manipulations, it's, you know, it gets fairly difficult because you have state lands and you have native blocks of lands. You have the Fish and Wildlife Service lands. And we're trying to get all the groups together to develop a long-term plan where it's not just rushing out and trying to do something with the habitat right away. Have a comprehensive plan that all the parties can sign off on, get the Division of Forestry involved, who's responsible for fire suppression, mm-hmm. and monitoring fires in the area. So hopefully we can get all those groups to the table and get some habitat benefits in the future. But that's, you know, long further down the road.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK is the number to call if you're out of the Anchorage area. 550-8422 is the number in Anchorage. And you're listening to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend, sitting in for a vacationing Steve Heimel, and we're talking about aerial wolf control on the Kenai Peninsula today. We're going to take a call now from Mike in Clam Gulch. Good morning, Mike.
Morning, Lori. Thank you for the program. Yeah, we've watched this wolf control thing, aerial hunting, for a while, and know a number of times the folks in the state of Alaska have voted against it, but it keeps coming back up. And I just thought I'd put my 2 cents in right now, since it's right home. It's in my unit 15C as well as 15A, and I think it's a really bad idea. First, the federal government does, as I think Jeff pointed out, in A. They have 80%. Overall, on the Kenai Peninsula, it's almost, and that's not counting the water in Cook Inlet, but on the Kenai Peninsula, about 70%, pretty close to 70% of the land is under federal control. And I doubt if the feds would go along with aerial wolf hunting. They haven't in other areas. Certainly, I'm happy that they will work for some work on the habitat, because I think that's one of the main problems. But one of the other problems, in citing a study that the Department of Game has done in the past, and the problem with the moose is bears more than wolves. About 40% of the loss of calves was attributed to bears, mostly black bears. About 6% attributed to the wolves. So I think they need to be looking at the bears. And one thing they can do about the bears, we have quite a few bears around. I got one that's going on the my daughter's porch and getting dog food. But there's a lot of bears around. But they could liberalize the bear hunt. It's a hassle right now. You got to have, you got to haul the hide out or the meat out, and it's a hassle. And right now, I guess they have it in the past, have had allowed three bears to be hunted, three black bears anyway. But I think that would be one answer. One other point, our wolf population, I think, is getting healthier. It used to be there was a mange problem, a lice problem, and they were it was a very unhealthy group of wolves. I think they're getting healthier. What we've seen lately, they're nice-looking wolves. And maybe that's why they want to kill them. But I just think it's ridiculous to be shooting these animals. It's one-sided. It's an outdoor council political action, and Ted Spraker is kind of myopic there, looking at just the moose and nothing else.
Mike, do you have what is it that bothers you the most? Is it just the method of getting rid of the wolves? Is it because is that your, like a philosophical objection, or is it just that you think that that's not the problem?
Well, that's one, but I think my problem is they're not looking at the big picture. They're looking at just the moose and not the other animals, or in some areas just the caribou.
Okay.
And I think that we can't manage that way. We need to manage for the big picture, and there's a value in having wolves, having healthy wolves.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for your comments, Mike. And I'm going to let Jeff respond a little bit to the idea that that bears could be the problem. Mike brought up the fact that he thinks bears are the bigger problem, not wolves. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt. We haven't done studies recently on the Kenai, but there's other areas, throughout the state where we've done them. Back in the 80s, there was quite a bit of work done, and that's where I believe he's getting his figures from. Where they found 34% of the mortality on moose calves, of their collared calves that they had at the time, was from black bears, 6% from brown, 6% from wolves. And that's in the first 3 months of life. So that's a real important thing to consider. Generally, the early time period in a calf's life, the first few months, if it's getting eaten by something, it's generally bears. But then you got to look at the whole year, and you have significant mortality on calf moose generally by wolves in the winter, because obviously the bears are denned up at that time. So you really have to read into some of those studies and look at some of the finer details to pull it out of there. A couple of things I would like to comment just briefly on Mike's question is we are back at three black bears annually on the Kenai, so you do have that opportunity. We're now fully allocated on the permits we issue for the brown bears on the Kenai in Unit 15. So we are looking at other issues, too. So,
I thought that I had seen some information yesterday about the number of animals that are killed just on the highway, which it sounded as if there's hundreds per year.
We average about 250 animals a year on the highways. I mean, obviously, there is no just one answer. It's a multiple. It's a lot of different things that are affecting our moose populations down there on the Kenai. It's not just wolves. It's not just bears. Not just automobiles. Not just hunters. Mm-hmm. It's a combination. Habitat succession. The other thing I'd like to just point out too on Mike's question is when we look at habitat improvements, we're not just focusing on one species. Early successional stages. Help a lot of different varieties of animals, whether it's snowshoe hares, which then help avian predators. I mean, it's setting back succession.
Mm-hmm. 250, hang on just a second, Teresa, and I'll get to you. 250 seems like a stunning number to me. That's a lot of moose. Are there any sort of mitigation methods or ideas being looked at along particular corridors that have the worst problems?
Yeah, there are, and we're in discussions now, and we have a committee formed, and our deputy director and myself are on a committee that's working with DOT to come up with, a long-term plan of how we can address some of those issues of moose getting hit along the roadways.
Mm-hmm. Teresa, did you want to add something there?
Yeah, actually, regarding the caller's comment, he mentioned the liberalization of bears and harvest of bears, that could be a solution rather than going to aerial wolf control. And, you know, I've seen this commentary in a lot of the a lot of the media that's been released lately, that people would rather that wolves be harvested, you know, by hunters and trappers rather than going to having the state go in and do aerial control and have a more liberalized harvest be the means by which they achieve their lower predation rates. The problem is, of course, is that predation isn't the problem. And so there's a lot of people saying we should just harvest more bears, we should harvest more wolves. We obviously don't want to start jumping to bear control right now when we're not even supportive of the wolf control, because we view the predation as not being the main issue on the Kenai. And certainly one of our big concerns in 15A, especially because of all of the refuge land there, is that any increase in the moose population could be detrimental to the productivity of the moose population, and especially to refuge resources. So in our view, the liberalization of harvest of predators is not the solution to the problem. We need perhaps some highway mitigation, which we know there's been a lot of work on that for many years, trying to improve the Sterling Highway and things like that to try and mitigate some of the moose loss on the highway, and then some, you know, wildland fire use potentially on the refuge, and some mechanical manipulation of habitat on state lands and things like that, even though that's obviously much more expensive. But having the fire is what needs to happen in order to provide for more moose on the northern Kenai. Now, again, the population is probably never going to be what it was in the past, at those really high numbers that had occurred when the population of humans on the Kenai was very low. In 15C, we really think that the harvest restrictions should be given time to work on 15C. And that, you know, we feel that those closures are temporary for the restrictions on moose harvest. And the Board of Game recognized this, you know, during the March meeting. There was a lot of discussion on this, that this closure was temporary, that they were going to try and increase the bull cow ratio, and that after that time, that they would they're actually going to be revisiting it in 2013. So again, you know, a temporary closure of some harvest, restricting harvest for the conservation of the moose population, we're supportive of that. And we just feel that those things should be given time to work.
And Jeff, are there controlled burn procedures happening in certain areas, or is there just too much population to risk doing something like that now?
Yeah, controlled burns are very difficult to pull off. I mean, there's prescriptions written and there's plans, but to try to get those to actually go, you know, and be lit, it's very difficult. And can I hit on a couple
Absolutely.
Of points there? Yeah, one of the things is, you know, I want to make it clear, in 15A, we don't think that just removing a few wolves is going to solve our issue. You know, we just want to be very clear with that. It's a bigger picture than that, but it's a start. We're down to a very low harvest now, and people, and again, that population is identified as its primary benefit to people is for human consumption. And so what we will do is, if we see an increase in our moose numbers, we're going to reallocate those animals to harvest. Now, is it going to get us back into our intensive management objectives? Probably not. By just removing a few wolves alone, that will not get us there. But it'll be a start, and it'll get the program running. In 15C, we have been above intensive management population and harvest objectives. Prior to this year, we dropped below harvest objectives, obviously. What we saw and we believe is the past strategy of Spike Fork 53 brow tine moose is not sustainable over the long run. So even if we finish and we go back to a different harvest strategy in 2013, we don't know that we're going to be above our minimum thresholds for our intensive management harvest objective. We probably will for population. So we're going to be looking into developing different strategies. And some of that may include, you know, a variety of different antlerless harvests, or there's going to be different strategies out there in place. And we may need to knock down predators somewhat to maintain that within our populate our harvest objective. So that's kind of a bigger picture of what we're trying to accomplish.
You're listening, you're listening to Talk of Alaska. Today we're talking about predator control on the Kenai Peninsula. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number outside of Anchorage is 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. In the Anchorage area, it's 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. And we're going to turn back to the phones for a moment. Roberta is in Homer. Good morning.
Good morning. And I strongly oppose the wolf killing, aerial wolf killing here in 15A and 15C. And I just don't think the studies, there hasn't been studies, and that this is a really heavy way, a heavy-handed way of coming into an area that is tourism and recreation and actually shooting wolves from the air. But I also feel there is logic, thoughtfulness, respect, and biology missing from this plan. And I think this is really just a symptom of a bigger problem in our Board of Game itself. We've got an administration and legislature who allows politics to run biology. And we have not had a balanced Board of Game in a very long time. The Alaska Constitution mandates a balanced Board of Game, and here we are, as unbalanced as you can get. So I'm really strongly opposed to this heavy-handed method, and that's really my comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Roberta, for those comments. We're going to be bringing Ted Spraker, one of the Board of Game members, on, so that he can respond to some of those questions. But Jeff, did you want to make a comment about the idea of imbalance on the board?
The board is appointed by governors and confirmed through the legislature. And, you know, the idea is that they're going to have a balanced view. And, you know, I guess all I can say to that is it's up to the people to decide whether or not that view is being expressed or not. That's not something for me to comment on.
Okay, well, we'll let Ted respond to that when he comes on the phone also. But Teresa, I wanted to ask you about your thoughts overall about the idea of aerial predator control. Is it just a program that you think should never be used, or are there times when it's appropriate?
Well, of course, aerial predator control and predator control in general is a very controversial issue, and from my perspective and our perspective is that whenever you're using a controversial method of wildlife management, there should always be really, really strong science to back it up, and there should be a documented it should be documented that predation is the problem. And also, there should be studies done to determine the population of wolves and bears, if there's going to be some control of those populations, and then doing some habitat work to determine whether or not there's sufficient habitat to meet the objectives of increasing your prey population and things like that. And certainly on the Kenai, we're very well aware that population studies of wolves have not been done. The Kenai Refuge is doing some brown bear population studies right now, but I don't know if I know that there's a population estimate for black bears. Of course, we're not talking about black bears at this point. We're talking about wolves. In the plans, ADFNG's proposal is to reduce the population of wolves in the northern Kenai from 45 to 15, and that's in order to have, a successful program that they need to knock down predation quite a bit. And then in the southern Kenai, the plan is at this time, they have an estimate of 40 to 70, I believe, wolves, and then also in that area to reduce the population down to 15. Now, we're not sure how those objectives are, we're not sure that they're going to be feasibly achievable. And of course, that's another problem, is that anytime you're going to be doing something controversial, that it should be achievable. And otherwise, it's a waste of time and a waste of resources, and it's a waste of the wolf population. The population objectives for the northern Kenai, certainly according to the Board of Game and the state, maybe moose consumption is the primary use of moose in that area, but that's not necessarily the primary use of wolves. And the wolf population is certainly in the Kenai Refuge, especially something that is enjoyed by visitors to the refuge and things like that. So, and visitors and recreationists alike like to see wolves on the Kenai. So,
we'll talk a little more about the tourism aspect. We're going to take a break here in a moment, and before we do, Jeff, I wanted to quickly give you a chance to, did you have something to add about the numbers?
Just one thing real quick. It's not necessarily that we're looking to reduce the population to 15 wolves in both of those areas. It's that if that occurred, we would stop so we can maintain viable populations. I just wanted to make that point.
Okay. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, Mr. Ted Spraker, who is the Kenai Board of Game member, he's going to be joining us on the phone as Talk of Alaska on Aerial Wolf Control on the Kenai continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska, and by
AT&T, rethink possible. Details at att.com/Alaska or 1-800-252-7266.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're talking today about predator control on the Kenai Peninsula. And I have guests in the studio. Jeff Salinger is the area wildlife biologist for Fish and Game. And also Teresa Fiorino is with Defenders of Wildlife. We have both these folks in the studio. And joining us by phone now is Ted Spraker. Ted is with the Board of Game. And he lives, is it in Soldotna, Ted?
All right. Good morning. Yes, I do.
Okay, good morning. Thank you for joining us. And please give us your perspective on what's needed here. You were quoted during a recent game board meeting as saying that you couldn't go home to the Kenai without some glimmer of hope that something would happen to help hunters. What is the situation there currently from your perspective?
Well, Lori, before I get into that, and again, thank you for inviting me. This is a very contentious sort of issue on the Kenai. It's been boiling. It's been beyond the boiling point many, many years, and I'm really glad to see the public getting involved and the department and, of course, the board getting involved. But let me just tell you a little bit about my history first. I worked as a wildlife biologist for the Department of Fish and Game for over 28 years. I moved to the Kenai. I was promoted to area biologist and transferred to the Kenai after working in Glen Allen for about 4 years. I arrived here in 1978, and I was in Jeff's chair for about 24 years. I retired in 02, and shortly after that, I was appointed to the Board of Game, and I'm currently serving my fourth term on the Board of Game. So, you know, this issue has not just been something I've learned about recently. It's been a kind of a lifetime career dealing with moose and wolves and bears on the Kenai. So that's the perspective I come from, and I've also had the opportunity to really listen to the public, and both the hunting and the non-hunting public on the Kenai, and the board weighs those very carefully when we make our decisions, and it's become very clear to the Board of Game that the public on the Kenai, whether they're the viewing public or the hunting public, are really disappointed and disgusted with the low numbers of moose that we have and the roadkill and all the other issues involving declining moose, and they wanted the board to start doing something, and the department came up with a good plan. And that brings up another point. There's been some criticism that the board is talking about this in barrel, and if you look at the history of this proposal, it actually first started in March of 09 in Anchorage at an Anchorage board meeting. The next time we dealt with this proposal was January of 2010 in Anchorage. The last time we dealt with it was March 2011, again in Anchorage. And at that time, the board passed it in hopes that the department would come up with an operational plan so that we could get something going. And that's what we're looking at in Beryl, is looking at the finer details of the operational plan.
Ted, let me ask you this. Is there a way to have any kind of gauge on how many moose are taken illegally? Is that part of the problem? Do you have any way to estimate what may be happening in that respect? I mean, we know that there's at least 250 are killed on roadways. What about illegal hunting? What's known about that?
Lori, as far as the impact to moose, I'm not trying to downplay this, but illegal hunting is probably the most insignificant factor we deal with. As Jeff said, we have about 250 moose that are killed annually on the road system. We've had winters where it was over 300. And I don't want to really get into all the debates of the biology here, although I really am very interested in this, and we'll talk about it at the board. But the facts are very clear. If you look at some of the wolf studies that were done on the Kenai and you run the numbers on them, wolves alone kill four times as many each year as people do with vehicles. And people worry at a considerable level about road kills when there's other issues out there that are very, very important, much more important and detrimental to our moose population. The same thing with bears. I mean, bears take a lot of calves, 34% taken by black bears in a study done in the early 80s shows very clearly that black bears are a huge problem. And as Jeff mentioned, the department came up with a proposal. We increased the bag limit on black bears to 3. Jeff has also increased the full allocation for brown bears, trying to address it there. So the board did look at the big picture. We were not just looking at wolves. And as Jeff said, 15A is not going to be the shining star of success for predator control in Alaska, whether it's bears or wolves or anything, because of the restrictions in land and access and so forth to land. We've also talked to the refuge about increasing the access for folks to take a few more black bears using conventional methods. And so far, we haven't had much cooperation with the refuge. I'll tell you another thing that's really important in the history of wolves being taken in Alaska and on the Kenai is that prior to the heavy restrictions on trappers, the trappers in 15A, for instance, in the 80s were able to take a high number of wolves. But since the trappers are so restricted, their harvest has dropped down. I think the harvest right now is about 8 to 10 wolves taken annually compared to 20. One year there was 32 taken in 15A alone. And that kept a lid on the numbers of wolves in 15A, and that option is off the table now.
Well, let me jump in here for a minute, Mr. Spraker. I want to get to a couple more calls, and then we're also going to bring John Toppenberg in here in just a little bit. But I have to tell you that all of the calls that we have lined up and so far the emails that we've had come in are all opposed to this proposal. So we're going to hear now from Robert in Anchorage, and then I want you, Mr. Spraker, to come back after that and tell us what are you hearing at the board meetings that's different than what we're seeing here in this forum. Robert?
Hi. Thanks for having me on. And right, just to address that issue just brought up, I mean, I've been to Board of Game meetings, and I've sat there and testified on some of these issues, and I feel like I'm not listened to. I think there's sort of a select group of people within the state that really have the ear of the Board of Game, and that have, and we have Corey Rossi, who's now, I forgot what his position is, but I don't envy the position that Mr. Sedinger is in with the Department of Fish and Game, because they just are clamping down on all their biologists. They can't speak their minds because we've got a political agenda coming from basically a political action group that's enforcing wildlife management decisions. At least that's my perception. So that's what I'm seeing, and that's where I think a lot of the frustration that's occurring is that there really isn't a voice of your average person. And Mr. Spraker, you know, he identifies two groups of people. One is, you know, the hunting and then the viewing public, but that's actually not right. There's another group. There's a group of people that hunt but don't feel like we need to have an over-management of every single resource just to eke out a few more moose. I mean, we're, you know, you've got, well, if we get the population of wolves down to 15, then we're okay, you know. So maybe how many moose are we going to get out of that by managing down to 15 wolves in these units? I mean, I just, that's where the frustration comes from. Maybe they're listening. Maybe the board game is listening, but the perception is they're not. And when you get someone appointed like Corey Rossi, who is like the only person within the Department of Fish and Game who doesn't have a biology degree, I mean, kudos to Mr. Spraker for all the hard work he did to get that degree. But and to Mr. Sedinger. But what about Mr. Rossi, who doesn't even have a degree?
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for those comments. And I appreciate your passion for this issue. I want to allow Mr. Spraker a chance to come back on here now. And what about the makeup of the board? Are there folks that are on the Board of Game who are advocates for non-consumptive uses?
Boy, you know, I guess I can say that there is. I mean, the board tries its best. I mean, we're not elected to the board. We're appointed by the governor. You know, we're selected by different groups, or we're recommended by different groups to be on the board. Everyone on the board listens to the public. And I can tell you personally, the most important part of the board meeting for me is public testimony. I will fill up an entire yellow tablet of comments, and I refer to those during the deliberation on proposals. That's a very important part for me, and each very same thing.
All right. Well, thank you. We're going to take, as soon as I said that all the calls were opposed, of course, I'm proved wrong by that, because we now have a caller on the line who is actually in favor of predator control. And as soon as Mr. Sellinger finds his cell phone and shuts it off, we'll take that call. But in the meantime, I want to tell you that you are listening to Talk of Alaska, and we're talking about predator control on the Kenai Peninsula today. And the number to call, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK, or in the Anchorage area, 550-8422. And Art is in Kenai, and he's in favor of predator control. Art, are you there?
Yes. Hello.
Hello.
Hello?
Yes, tell us your thoughts on predator control, please.
Well, yeah, that wasn't my main reason for calling, but I am, you know, for predator control if they're obviously out of balance to everything. And they get that way with so many people figuring they got the way to figure it out, and it's their plan or their special interest or whatever it is. If they're overrun by something, I am in favor of that. My question, though, was on this spike fork things for the moose. I'm an avid moose hunter. I've got 10 grandkids, 4 kids, and it got us through a lot of years getting them spike forks. And the question is, if they were supposedly taken, you can take the spike forks years back because the biologist figured that they were inferior bulls and they were going to last a season or two, so let's let the people take them. And you're talking about consumption. Well, the only ones that get them is the bears, and I think they got that figured out. But that's my comment there. And my other question was, I understand that even outside the spike fork regulations, the Nanil Chick area and the Cooper Landing area, is this correct that they can shoot spike forks anyway? What's happening there? I can take my comments off the air.
All right. Thank you. Thanks, Art.
Thanks.
Jeff, would you like to weigh in there?
Yeah, just briefly, what we have... I think what Art was getting at is we eliminated the spike fork harvest, and without getting, you know, this is more about other things, so I won't get into a detailed diatribe about that. But there is a federal subsistence season on the federal lands, and this year they were only allowed, during their early season, a federal subsistence season, they were only allowed the same animals as the general public was, and that was a 50-inch or 4-brow tine moose. Now, for the late season, that started October 20th through it starts October 20 and it can run until November 10th. They were allowed actually a spike fork 50 or 3 brow tine moose for that season, but the refuge kept very close control and monitored that harvest very closely, and they did subsequently close it. So that season has been closed. So they harvested a few animals off of that, not a significant number.
All right. You're listening to Talk of Alaska. We're talking about predator control on the Kenai. We're going to bring John Toppenberg in. He's with the Alaska Wildlife Alliance. But before we talk to John, I just want to comment on an email that we had come in from Bonnie in Anchorage, and she opposes the aerial hunting. She says that the area in question is difficult to land in, would lead to difficulty in dispatching wounded animals and collecting those killed. She thinks that the ability to kill wolves from the air is difficult. The shooting is extremely difficult. The method is cruel. They can be hunted by anyone with a permit, which leaves it open to those whose ethics are not necessarily respectful of the animals. So she goes on for quite a bit, but obviously she opposes this. And before we turn now to John, how difficult is it to make sure that once a wolf is shot in this method that it's actually collected? It seems that it would be hard to know if they're dead and down, and do they land then and always try to find the animals? What happens there, Jeff?
Well, generally speaking, this is occurring in the winter, for one thing. So you do have snow, and you can track animals, and you can trail animals. To my knowledge, virtually every animal that has been shot in a control program has been retrieved. You know, there's different methods. Sometimes you can be assisted with a snow machine, so you can go in by snow machine and collect the animals after they have been shot. You know, the goal isn't to shoot an animal and leave it to suffer and rot. So, sure. I mean, you know, obviously there's a lot of effort put into retrieving those animals, and you don't shoot them just through the trees per se. You wait till they get out in the open, and you try to take the animal that way. And as far as I know, there's been a rare, very, very high success rate of retrieving the animal once it's been shot.
Okay. Well, let's bring John Toppenberg on now. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
So, John, you are a Kenai resident and against the idea of aerial predator control. What's your perspective from where you sit on the Kenai?
Slight correction, I would not say that we, being the Alaska Wildlife Alliance, is always in opposition. It's just that most of the time we are, because it does not meet scientific standards, accepted scientific standards. And I want to thank you for having the program also, and I want to thank Jeff for being there. He's in kind of a tough position, kind of caught between two extremes. But anyway, my position is that in 15A, wolf control is not helpful. There's no food available for more moose. It's just kind of a wasted effort. And there is an answer to all this, and it's a small controlled burns. I know they're difficult, but actually, it'll do our moose some real good, and I think Fish and Wildlife would find that the U.S. or Department of Fish and Wildlife would find that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife will probably work with them on small controlled burns. And as far as 15C is concerned, moose are at population goals, and you know, what more can you ask for realistically? And I think the lesson from Unimak Island historically is that the feds will not tolerate artificial manipulation of our natural resources on federal land. Basically, habitat enhancement is the real answer, and that we need to accept that the moose will never populate the Kenai the way they used to as long as we suppress all fires. Also, airborne wolf killing makes commercial hunting interests feel good, but will do nothing meaningful to bring back moose to their historic highs. Airborne wolf control basically does not meet feasibility assessment requirements. It's a kind of a non-starter from a scientific and practical perspective. Over and out.
Well, thank you, John. We're going to take one quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk more about, I want to know more about the fact that there's no moose bull hunt in 15C, and let's talk a little bit about how long that's been in place and what's happening because of that as Talk of Alaska on predator control on the Kenai continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder to shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. And by the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Apparently I misspoke right before we went to the break because there is a bull hunt in 15C, but it's restricted. Jeff, please give us the correct information.
Yeah, since 1987, you know, there's been other little side permit hunts, but the basic general season has been a spike fork 50 or three brow tine moose. In 2011, at the March meeting, the board passed a proposal to make all moose hunting for bulls by state regulation. The only legal bull was a one with a 50-inch antler spread or at least four brow tines on one side throughout the Kenai, including 15C.
And so that restriction has just been in place for how long?
This is the first season we just went through with that.
Okay. And so why not wait and see what the results of that would be for a few years? Does the state see the situation as so desperate that you have to also institute predator control, or could you not wait a few years to see what happens with the bulls?
You know, that's a very obvious question to be asked, but the idea is we will be looking at new restrictions coming in 2013 as our next scheduled board meeting. We saw the immediate concern was a very depressed bull-cow ratio, so that's why those initial steps were taken. And we wanted to do something for the public because of the hardships that were placed on them by having the restricted seasons of a 50-inch or four-brow tine animal. And again, we only took 30 animals this year, and we, you know, historically we've taken much more on the Kenai, but in the past several years, we've been between over 400 animals have been taken. So we saw that as a significant decline in opportunity.
Okay, I have a quick question then. I know, Teresa, you wanted to respond to some of Mr. Spraker's comments, and then I'd love to get to a few more calls. We've got a number on the line. One in favor of the control and a few that are against it. But I have a silly urban question. We have a moose in our neighborhood with an enormous rack, and it's problematic to have him wandering the streets of Anchorage and eating my cherry trees, frankly. Does ADF&G ever transfer moose or animals from one area to another? Is there any way that you could just dart this guy and take him down to the Kenai and turn him loose?
Well, you know, as a general practice, no, we don't do that. There's a lot of things that can happen with disease spread, you know, and, you know, just the, you know, what we believe in is if you make the conditions right in an area, the moose population will support itself.
Okay. Well, I guess he'll have to stay in Airport Heights then. And Teresa, there were some things that Mr. Spraker said that you wanted to respond to.
I'd like to respond quickly to what Jeff said. I mean, there's been a lot of in the media too, like this desire to help. You know, the Board of Game and ADF&G have both said that, you know, we want to show that we're doing something. We want to show that we're trying to help the hunting population on the Kenai. And, you know, My response to that would be that just because you would like to do something doesn't mean that whatever you're trying to do is feasibly achievable or appropriate. And just to show that you're trying to help, I don't necessarily believe is appropriate. Regarding Mr. Spraker's comments about the fact that this has been going on for quite some time since 2009, that there's been discussions at the Board of Game meetings, and you know, the caller that called in to respond to that. It is true that the majority of people that attend these meetings are not the people that have different wildlife views, either non-consumptive or consumptive, that is not necessarily doesn't feel that some of the programs that the Board of Game institutes are appropriate and things like that. And, you know, the general public didn't really know about this issue. They didn't know that the Board of Game was discussing predator control on the Kenai until recently, until the media started discussing it. So I don't think that just because they've been discussing it for a while means that people had an opportunity to weigh in. The other thing is that, you know, Mr. Spraker said that he didn't want to debate the biology. The fact is that during the Board of Game meeting in March, the Board of Game repeatedly ignored the biology that was brought to them by ADF&G regarding the fact that productivity has not been measured in the Southern Kenai, that the population of moose has not been depleted, that predation was not the problem. They repeatedly put on the record or tried to put on the record that there was this problem with low calf-cow ratios, that productivity had been negatively impacted, that predators were were having too big of an impact. And from my listening to the testimony, that was not the information that was presented by ADF&G. So those are just two of the things that I wanted to address.
Jeff, did you want to respond or should we take a call?
We'll take a call, I guess.
All right. Let's hear from Roger in White Mountain. Very quickly, Roger, we're low on time. What's your comment?
Good morning. Bears take a good portion of moose. Wolves do a lot more damage on moose, and man takes his so-called bear share. There's got to be a compromise between all three predators. If bears and wolves take their fair share and there's not enough to go around, then man should scale back and do his hunting at the local stores. Let nature take its own course. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. And now we're going to hear from Ken, who is in Southeast. Where in Southeast are you, Ken?
I'm in Durango.
All right. So tell us very quickly, you're in favor of predator control. Why is that?
The question is that I have is the answer to this may be in British Columbia. British Columbia, which is one-third the size of Alaska, has 175,000 moose, according to their website. The reason this population is so high, according to outfitters in Canada and sportsmen in Canada, is they're very aggressive in their spring black bear hunting. They many times give away a black bear hunt with a moose hunt in the fall, and they are the world leaders in doing sport hunting of wolves. People travel all over the world to Canada to take a wolf because one part of their pelts. But one reason that I'd like to bring up is there's no doubt they have better habitat because of their logging. The logging that they did extensively all over British Columbia creates great browse.
Okay, well, thank you. We are about out of time, but thanks for those good thoughts, and thanks for the other folks who didn't get a chance to come on line. Thank you to my guests, Jeff Salinger, who is with Fish and Game, Teresa Fiorino with Defenders of Wildlife, Ted Spraker with the Board of Game, and John Toppenberg with the Alaska Wildlife Alliance. Thank you to those who sent emails. Thanks to Kristen Spack, Josh Edge, and Annie Fite. Stay tuned next week when Steve Heimel will be back for Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, Condor Airlines, offering nonstop service to Frankfurt from Anchorage and Fairbanks between May and September, with connections to most German and European destinations. Details available at condor.com. And by Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, providing insight on statewide business and government issues. There's more information online at akbizmag.com. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.